Radio News is a choice that matters. Respected worldwide for our coverage of social justice issues, our investigations into how government and corporate policies affect people, and our monitoring of environmental threats, struggles for equality, and much more. You choose to listen to FSRN to hear stories and voices ignored and unheard in the corporate and government press. Find out how you can help support us at our website, fsrn.org, where you can also download our newscasts, documentaries, and special reports. FSRN, a choice that matters. Palestinians in Gaza face arbitrary arrest, detention, torture, and unfair trials, according to findings of a report from Human Rights Watch released today. The report, Abusive System, Criminal Justice in Gaza, documents what it calls extensive violations by Hamas security forces and says courts are failing to protect due process. It notes that since Hamas took control of Gaza in 2007, three men have been executed after confessions that appear to have been obtained under torture. Safiya Ahmed Shrair described to Human Rights Watch how her son, Abdel Karim, was executed by Hamas government firing squad in May 2011 after a military court convicted him of collaboration.
They abducted my son, put him in prison, and tortured him. They executed him. Before they executed him, I didn't get to see my son. They buried him without letting me see him. I'm asking for justice, for the truth to come out, to differentiate the oppressor from the oppressed. My son died oppressed.
The Independent Commission for Human Rights said it had received nearly 150 complaints of torture by Hamas forces in 2011. The group also monitors abuses of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, and in August faulted it for failing to hold police accountable after a beating in Ramallah led to at least six protesters being hospitalized. Human Rights Watch attributes much of the abuse of detainees to the political rivalry between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. Hamas leadership responded to the report, calling it politicized and one-sided. It said it had opened prisons to rights groups for oversight. Internet freedoms have also come under scrutiny recently, following an order from the Hamas-led government to block all pornography-related sites. Hamas contends that such sites conflict with the culture of Gaza that is based on Islam and social traditions, but some Gazans criticize the move, which they say could be used to prevent access to other information. FSRN's Rami Al-Maghari has more.
The Ministry of Communications will fend Gaza's internet service providers about $300 a day if they don't block pornography sites. While some residents support the rule, others see it as the latest crackdown on personal freedoms. Abir Ayub is a 25-year-old social activist. Abir says that following the decision, she has had troubles accessing news and information websites.
It's up to me, I choose the things I want to watch and I choose the things I don't want to watch. It's not your job to choose for me, because God gave me this choice, so he will reward me or punish me at the end.
But university graduate Mu'tazal Ajla from Gaza City has no problem with the decision and says some censorship is needed.
Satan is very good at distracting our attentions, and I think no one can guarantee he or she would not attempt to go to such websites. This is better and rather a relief for us at the end of the day.
The Hamas-led government maintains that its latest decision to block pornography-related websites is not intended to repress their freedoms, and that they received appeals from Gazans to block access to them. Kamal El-Masri is a chief for the license department at the IT and Telecommunication Ministry.
The decision is clear and the instructions are also quite clear. All websites that advocate violence, drug trafficking, and extreme ideology can be blocked within the terms of law. Yet we have started actually blocking pornography sites, for there has been a national consensus on that.
Al-Masri adds that the ministry has not intervened technically in blocking those websites, and that internet service providers are the ones to carry out this on their own. Osama Abu Zbeda is director of one of Gaza's ISPs, Orange Palestine. He said they are trying to make sure non-pornographic sites aren't blocked.
As for the websites, we do not apply filtration or blocking on websites that begin with words like hot. Maybe this is hot weather, hot cooking, hot water. But most of the websites blocked are those which are purely pornographic, proxy sites that breach the blocking itself, and those that are used for hacking.
There are concerns that the website blocking could lead to other politically motivated censorship in the future. Dr. Ibrahim Abrash is a political analyst.
They employ the moral-based censorship as a means to censor political issues. And if the people keep silent towards such censorship, then the censorship will likely include everything. I believe the Palestinian people are well aware of what is right and what is wrong for them.
Critics say this new ban is part of an overall strategy to roll back personal freedoms. Over the past 3 years, the Hamas-led government has issued a number of controversial decrees, including banning women smoking water pipes in public spaces and prohibiting men from working in women's clothing stores and in women beauty salons. Rami Al-Mighari, Afasaran, Gaza.
Thousands of North Koreans have fled their homeland to find refuge in South Korea. It's an escape that is often physically demanding. Many swim across a river into China, then travel in secret, avoiding authorities before they reach Southeast Asia, and from there they go to South Korea to seek asylum. But some refugees endure an even bigger challenge. Those with disabilities face a grueling journey and an uncertain future. FSRN's Jason Strother has one such story from Seoul.
Every Saturday, Ji Sung Ho and other human rights activists protest at a busy intersection in the South Korean capital. He's holding a banner that denounces the North Korean government for its human rights abuses. Ji escaped from North Korea in 2006, and his journey was challenging.
I used to help my family make money back in North Korea by stealing coal and selling it in the market. I used to take it off moving trains. In 1996, when I was 15 years old, I had an accident. I was on the train and I became dizzy. I fell off and the train ran me over.
Ji lost both his left hand and left foot in that accident. He says if it wasn't for his family's help, he would have never survived. North Korea's hospitals did not have enough medicine, so Ji said his parents used salt water to clean his wounds, and the country was suffering from continuous food shortages, yet his father gave Ji food while his brother and sister went hungry. Even after he recovered, life wasn't much easier.
It was in 2000 and some friends and I crossed the Tumen River into China to get food. I quickly saw that even animals there ate more rice than us. I felt really sad. My grandmother had died of starvation a few years earlier. I also learned about Kim Jong-il's family and how much better they lived than us normal people. I decided then that someday I needed to escape North Korea for good.
But Ji says that time had to wait, so he went back to his home across the border. But he didn't make it very far.
I was on my way back from the Tumen River. My home was just a couple miles away. And then some North Korean police officers came up to me. They saw that I had things from China, which was evidence that I had escaped. They took me to the police station and beat me for a week. They hit me even more than others that I crossed the border with. They told me I had brought shame on North Korea because I was disabled, and that a person with only one leg should not leave his home.
Ji's claims are just some of the allegations human rights groups say is proof that North Korea abuses people with disabilities. A 2006 United Nations report accused Pyongyang of sending citizens with physical and mental disabilities into countryside detention centers. Ji Sung Ho says the treatment he endured in prison was one reason he lost trust in the government. In 2006, he and his brother crossed the Tumen River together, but from there, Ji went on his own. With the help of human rights traffickers, he made it to Southeast Asia, and from there, flew on to freedom in South Korea. Like all defectors who make it here, Ji was given free medical treatment. He says the doctors were amazed that as an amputee, he had survived his escape.
They said that of all the refugees that make it here, someone with such disabilities was rare to see. They gave me a good pair of crutches, and later I received my prosthetic hand and foot. I feel I lead a normal life now.
Ji counts himself lucky. All his family, except for his father, who died while in North Korean custody, made it to South Korea and are reunited. Now he studies law at a university in Seoul. He also began his own human rights group called Now Action and Unity for Human Rights. And he records a radio program carried by U.S.-funded Radio Free Asia. It's broadcast into North Korea. On the program, Ji talks about life in South Korea and how what he learned about history at his school back home in the North was untrue. According to South Korea's Unification Ministry, unlike Ji, many of the 24,000 North Korean refugees have a more difficult time adjusting to life here. Kwon Won-hyung is a psychiatrist at Hanawon, a government resettlement facility for recent North Korean defectors. Kwon says many of the people they see have been tortured, their bodies scarred from being beaten. He says many have post-traumatic stress disorder and suffer from nightmares and are afraid of police officers. Kwon says up to 30% of refugees show signs of PTSD. But for Ji Sung Ho, he says life in South Korea is better than he could have ever expected.
I think as a country becomes more democratic and society receives better education, people with disabilities are treated better. For me, South Korea is really like heaven.
A North Korean did participate in this year's Paralympics, which some observers suggest could be a sign that the country's leaders are changing their views on people with disabilities. But human rights groups say much more needs to be done to improve treatment and root out discrimination for the country's nearly 2 million people with disabilities. Jason Strother, FSRN, Seoul.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Janine Etter and Shauna Ray. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. Thanks for listening in Los Angeles. I'm Dorian Marina.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the October 4th, 2012 edition. Hoping to have some call-in guests from out of town, and maybe even an in-studio guest. We'll see. There's a special Sub Rosa presentation tonight. I guess it's part of their open mic of the first anniversary of Santa Cruz Occupy. That'll be at 8 o'clock tonight at 7:03 Pacific for those who are interested. And stay tuned for 2 hours of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, local civil rights and civil wrongs.
Keeping the peace down on your knees. Keeping the peace, keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, keeping the peace. We got you down on your knees. By keeping the peace, it's Operation Peacemaker. It's not a war, can't you see? It's peace, they're fighting and they're killing for. We'll stay there till the end. It's the white man's burden. Keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, keeping the peace. Yeah, we're keeping the peace. Keeping the peace, we got you down on your knees. By keeping the peace, it's our responsibility. We guarantee we'll protect the unelected from democracy. No, say no more, my friend. It will not end until we save them from them. Saving your hills. By keeping the peace.
you want to know what it means, just ask the Somalians and the First Nations and the Afghans and the Haitians and the Japanese in the 1940s about keeping the peace. So say you've got to ask the Somalians and the First Nations and the Afghans and the Haitians and the Muslim men left to rot in prison about keeping the peace. So take a look at what's happening. They're killing in the name of peace all over again. It's never gonna end until we get a taste of what we're offering. Close our eyes and just keep on talking, all the while pretending we're keeping the peace.
And that was Keeping the Peace with a little bit of echo. And Sarah Marlowe, great singer. She's got three albums out. I think I played them all at one time or another. This is from an album called True Stories, and I like it. But more to the point, we have a caller, an on-time caller, Jay Lederman, attorney at law, and General Scallywag. Hey there, Jay. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You're calling from Ventura?
I am calling from lovely Ventura.
And that is, of course, a town somewhere between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara, closer to Santa Barbara down south.
That is the correct geography, sir. Yes, sir.
And we've had you on the air before. You've been a public defender in the past and an advocate for civil rights for homeless people, or I should say the diminishing civil rights for homeless people.
Diminishing in Santa Cruz based upon what I've seen there, but yeah.
Well, you had some different experiences in Ventura, perhaps.
No. They just seem to be diminishing more rapidly in Santa Cruz, was perhaps what I inarticulately stated.
No, yeah, I wouldn't know. I know that I worked in Santa Barbara for a year 20 years ago, and I had some contact with Ventura activists. Santa Barbara, because it originally had a pretty hefty homeless movement back in the 80s, I think had sort of a head start. And also there was a university there, the White House, the Reagan White House was there when he was the Führer, or the president, as the case may be. And there was also a legal center devoted to civil rights, the Legal Defense Center in Santa Barbara. All that's gone. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about your work in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you recently, of course, have taken on the cases of Christopher Doyen, also known as Commander X, more notorious for more kind of international so-called hacksterism, which isn't really an accurate term to describe what he's accused of.
Hacktivism.
Thank you very much.
Hacktivism is what they call it, and that is what I've been primarily defending in terms of my civil rights work over the past year or the past couple of years at this point.
A lot of online so-called criminal behavior that you've been, trying to decriminalize or free people from the toils of or whatever?
Right. In fact, correct in both regards. I don't know if you were able to see. I did an interview that Radio Free Europe published, and then The Atlantic picked it up in transcript form that kind of talked all about that. But it's generally correct in both regards. One component of it is that, you know, they're trying to take sort of good protesters, regular protesters, who, because they're doing this sort of thing online, instead of facing the 6 months like you know, some of you sleep criminals up there. I mean, 6 months is bad enough, but when you do a protest online, you end up looking at 10 or 15 years of federal time, and that's what we're that's the stark reality of what we're facing about these.
I know there's been a lot of talk about a crackdown on the internet in terms of the ability to use it and the commercialization of the internet and censorship. Do you have any updates on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of broad range. Is there something I could focus on as opposed to any other area?
Well, I don't know. Any major threats coming up on the horizon? Any major changes in the last year that people who are, stuck fighting the sleeping ban might not know about?
Anonymous is a global movement, and that's where, that's the work I've been doing. And there, in fact, I believe Mr. Doyon might be involved in the press and PR side. The Philippines just passed the world's most restrictive sort of anti-free speech on the Internet set of laws that really say you had a rolling blog going on with this show that people were commenting on. If someone were to type in, Robert sucks, that could arguably be criminal now in the Philippines. Japan's done something that's similar, but much more close to home. I received notice today, as a matter of fact, that we here in California have received a federal grant, yay feds, to combat piracy and intellectual property crime. So my guess, based upon this and based upon Kamala Harris's statement about a year or so ago that she was shifting resources from essentially like gang prosecution to internet-based-type prosecution,
Kamala Harris,
I think that along with this
Kamala
grant
Harris is
really going to make us see an explosion in these types of prosecutions.
Kamala Harris is, of course, California Attorney General.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'm sure that all educated listeners know that, but have I ever been prosecuted? I don't think I've ever been prosecuted by the California Attorney General. Just dear old Bob Lee here in Santa Cruz and a few other local DAs. I know Curb Hugger Chris is our Commander X, or Chris Doyon is still, isn't he still facing charges here in Santa Cruz for, sleep crime and possibly other machinations of, what's the situation for them here? I know Linda LeMaster goes on trial on October 15th for 647E, the so-called lodging law that was used to drive away Occupy Santa Cruz people. And before that, Peace Camp 2010 people, the year before that. And it goes and is also used to go after protesters in other cities. But what's going on with old Curb Hugger, as I call him?
You know, I think you actually got it exactly right. I can expound upon it. He is. What had happened was this. He left the jurisdiction, so it would have been a really good time to just sort of enter the no contest plea that they wanted. I had sort of paperwork in hand because we were talking about just kind of giving up the Santa Cruz case and focusing on the federal case. And when when he sort of ran away to Canada and developed the idea that maybe it wasn't such a good idea to plead guilty to any of this, to clear any of it up, because that would show a lack of solidarity. Now, I don't know how running away to Canada instead of standing trial with your co-defendant shows more solidarity than, not pleading guilty. But I guess I understood what he was talking about.
I haven't spoken to Chris myself, but if I were considering this as a kind of an abstract thing, I would say, there are those who, if you're at liberty, then presumably you can continue to publicize the case, continue the struggle for freedom in more, shall we say, you have more liberty to do that. But again, he wasn't immediately threatened with jail, right? He was simply having to deal with court dates, right?
That's all it was. What they wanted from him was a 2-year stay away from the courthouse at night. I think really the only term of probation that they wanted was don't sleep on the courthouse. Don't sleep on the courthouse grounds is more correct. And really, if he was going to be in Canada, I don't understand why he didn't let me just put it in. Everyone was aware he was in Canada. We weren't, you know, I had advised the court of that, so it wasn't, you know, anything where we were pulling a fast one on anyone. But still, he stands resolute, and I understand it, that these charges are wrong. They're morally wrong. And I think, you know, we can appreciate Gary Johnson and the other sleep criminals that, as you so call them, that have actually given up their freedom to protest this very draconian and very wrong use of authority.
Yeah, Gary, of course, is in jail right now, but he should be coming out at the end of October. I think Ed Fry, who's under house arrest with an ankle bracelet, again, for the same incident or the same series of incidents as Chris is charged with back in 2010, he will be going off ankle bracelet. He'll have to give up his bracelet probably in a couple of weeks. But I guess there's also these other charges of, you know, taking down the county's website or interrupting it for 18 minutes as a kind of a form of protest against the county's prosecution of the other Peace Camp 2010 protesters way back in December of 2010.
Right. That's when I referred to the federal case. That's exactly what I meant. That is, in fact, what he's charged with. What they're saying is that he and a couple other people used a device called the High Orbit Ion Cannon. Kind of sounds like this cool little space age toy, but it's actually just a computer, you know, a web that you can download for free, and it's as simple as kind of cutting and pasting a web address in it. In this case, I believe it's co.santacruz.ca.us or one of those, something like that, and you know, you click fire, and they're not alleging that he knocked it offline. They're alleging that it was in fact an 18-minute slowdown, and it requires that they prove at least $5,000 worth of damage to make it criminal. And whereas in similar cases, they claim hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, Santa Cruz really reached for it and claimed about $6,300 worth of damages. So, those are not sustainable damages. So,
you think he had a good chance of beating the case?
I think he had just a phenomenal case, and he had the ability to litigate all of the First Amendment issues that are attendant with and part and parcel to such a prosecution. And I understand in retrospect, I mean, I was mad at the time, but I understand in retrospect the reasons that he fled. He was supposed to be residing in a certain place and not using the internet, not using the internet relay chat, basically chat rooms, which he goes in to do his work. He wasn't supposed to be on Twitter, you know, communicating with people, other forms of communication. It's, he felt he was guilty until proven innocent. He felt that that being under the thumb of the court was unacceptable to him. And I think he really felt a sense of betrayal by his country. By the kind of ideals of justice that, you know, are supposed to be inherent in both United States law and United States, in our ethos. And he just didn't see that and, you know, kind of left in disgust.
So he wasn't charged with anything from Orlando, Florida, where last year he anticipated he might be accused of, should we say, I don't know, overburdening or taking down their website in solidarity with Food Not Bombs activists who are being arrested by the bundle down there for feeding people in visible public places.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our suspicion is that they're holding that those indictments either exist and they're holding them in their back pocket, or that they've not indicted them, but that's, you know, potentially on the horizon, depending upon how things in San Diego. But you know, they have proof problems in terms of what he actually did in that case, and by that I mean, you know, there's no indication that he was involved in the actual hacking. In fact, I think the bulk of the evidence is that he was not involved in the hacking.
Is there any?
Go
ahead.
The evidence against him seems to be that he sort of importuned, kind of rallied the troops. So it's essentially it's a solicitation.
Well, have there been have charges actually been filed against him for the Orlando event or not?
No. We're
speculating. We don't wish to criticize the feds for something they may not have done yet. Let me ask, is it true, the rumor that he's writing some kind of a book that he's putting out? Has that been...
That is absolutely true. I hope he gets to it soon. I think his tale is a fascinating tale.
Uh-huh.
I think people really should know who this person is that spends their days and nights, you know, really fighting for our freedoms via the internet.
Well, I know Chris was very, he used the internet a lot to drum up public attention to the Peace Camp 2010 activists, and we had more publicity there than we, I think, ever had in any prior protest. But let's, lest I be accused of, too much hero, I wouldn't call Chris my hero, but I certainly, have a lot of respect for some of the things he's done. Less respect for some of the other things, but, we always have our disagreements with people.
Mm-hmm.
There are some other issues I wanted to call you about because you may not be interested in or up to date on those. A recent court decision in the Hampsmeyer case here by an attorney, the judge was Judge Ronald White, federal judge in San Jose, and the attorney covering the case is Mike Millen, who's going to be on my show, I hope. He's agreed to, and we'll see if he carries through with that on Sunday when I do a morning show at 9:30. I think he's coming on around 10. He was the first successful challenger of the the unreasonably disturbing noise statute in Santa Cruz, which has a particular place on my target wall where I throw darts, because I was convicted of the crime, singing downtown with homeless lyrics in front of former Mayor Coonerty's bookshop, Santa Cruz, and it was called Unreasonably Disturbing Noise. I'm not the best singer, but I wouldn't call it unreasonably disturbing noise, and I think it would also have a political implication. Becky Johnson also was convicted of that. It's all written about on Santa Cruz Indie Media, for those who want to check it out, and on Becky Johnson's website, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, for those who want to check it out. But the issue is the law itself is a peculiar one, or at least certainly sounds peculiar in terms of persons understanding what it is they can and can't do. We had thought when we went into court we had a slam dunk case almost. Little did we know it was the longest court case in infraction court case I've ever heard of in Santa Cruz history. It lasted, 13 days or something like that in court. It just went on and on. And the judge's findings, commissioner, were very peculiar, to say the least. She sort of brought in her decision to accused us in the end of some kind of conspiracy to plan to disrupt business in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, which we'd never done. We do attempt to boycott, encourage people to boycott the bookstore. I do, and because it's run by politicians who are hypocritical in how they treat homeless people, in terms of how they speak about them and what legislation they favor on the Santa Cruz City Council. But the issue about the unnecessarily disturbing noise issue is a broader one for Santa Cruz, and is the law has now been declared unconstitutional, but the issue for homeless people and for performers and for actually anybody on the street was the fact that what police would do is they would use this strange ordinance, which I'm actually trying to get the actual wording of it. I'm looking for it on my computer here, and it's right here, it is. No person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and B, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. It's a pretty long sentence. I won't blame people for not following it. You've been acquainted with this law before. I've talked to you about it at some point, perhaps. I don't know. Do you?
Actually, I don't think so. And I did. I did see your email about it, and I didn't. I got to skim it for a minute, but. Unfortunately, I've been traveling the past couple of days and just got back into town and didn't really have a chance to really read up on it. But it's, as a lawyer who fancies himself a constitutional lawyer, it immediately grabs your attention, and it's really disturbing. And it seems to me to be the type of thing that's unconstitutionally vague.
Unreasonably disturbing, would you say?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, well, this was sort of a practice run. I mean, we noticed that police were going up to performers on the street, and they weren't saying, we find your noise unreasonably disturbing or your music bad. They were saying, we have a complaint from a citizen, the heckler's veto approach, which says that, and if you don't leave, he'll give you a ticket. And what they didn't tell people was that a police officer is not supposed to write out a citation unless he feels there's probable cause for it. Although I have to ask you that question, if a citizen wants to cite another citizen and he's the only witness, is a police officer obliged to do that, or can you suggest that that person go down and, try to get the district attorney to file a charge or do something else? Or is
the police officers do have discretions to refuse a citizen's arrest. Especially a custodial arrest, they can write a citation, or they can sort of send it for follow-up investigation. They're not required to immediately accept that. They have to determine whether it appears there's probable cause. And if it appears there's probable cause and someone's, suggesting there should be a citizen's arrest, then they... Then I'm not sure, but they have to actually make, let me back up a second. It's like the thing where, the example I like to use is Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack. Ooh, my arm's broke, and he starts wiggling his arm around. The cops aren't required to believe what's sort of ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
He hit me, he broke my nose. Oh, well. It doesn't look like you've been hit in the nose. You can't really expect the cop to make an arrest based upon that. But if it appears there's probable cause and someone's signing the citizen's arrest, then they are supposed to. I haven't looked at that in a while, so don't take that to the bank, but that's,
right.
That's my recollection.
I understand. What we found a couple years ago was that performers, there's nothing wrong with a police officer or a citizen coming up to a person performing and saying, I've been here for an hour in front of my store. Can you kind of keep it down? Could you move along? In fact, that was the voluntary street performers guidelines, not law, but agreement that had been in force between 1980 and 2002 until city council turned it into the move along law, which is a very restrictive law that's being followed as a kind of a regimental kind of order to the community, which now says if you have a display device of any kind, which is described as anything capable of holding tangible things. So a display device could be a table, it could be a cup, it could be an open guitar case. So if you're registering voters, you have to move along every hour. You can't return to that place except the 24 hours later, and you have to be 100 feet away if you move to another location. And that's not the law that was challenged, but that's the kind of thing that was going on that supplanted the street performers' voluntary guidelines, which simply said people have an informal understanding that if you've been playing for a while and anybody, a merchant, another performer wants to use a space, wants to come up and do it, then you will, after an hour after being so asked, you'll leave within that hour. And it didn't require people to leave. It didn't have legal force, but it really had effective force, and there was very few, if any, instances of people refusing to do that. And it was changed because the city really wanted to have an anti-panhandling law or an anti-activist law so they could move people away. We were doing boycotts in front of some stores, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom was. And so they had other motivations than going after street performers. In fact, they sort of apologized that street performers would, quote, be caught up in this net, which, of course, they are at the present time. But more recently, instead of using this move-along law, which they do still use, to the annoyance and also really serious discomfort of a number of performers who feel it's really abusive to them, particularly since people want them to stay and nobody's complaining. What they're using, and they do that without any complaints, they use this unreasonably disturbing noise law, which has now been found unconstitutional, which in essence, you know, they would use it by saying, we aren't going to make complaints, but if we get an anonymous complaint or a complaint, we won't tell you who makes the complaint, but unless you move, we'll write out a citation. So almost 95% of the time, people would move along, even if they were playing very quietly.
Well, but here's the problem. If the police don't witness it themselves,
right,
then who's going to testify to it?
Well, they would say that, you know, the citizen arrest.
No, that's hearsay. So.
Well, the citizen arrest, that is to say, the cop is not going to say, I'm writing you a ticket. The cop has said, a citizen wants to write you out a citation.
But then if they're not disclosing, no, first of all, the citizen has to sign it.
Well, of course, they do. But you see,
so
this
the
is before.
Has to sign off on it.
Right. But this is before.
Public, but then they have to come to court.
Right.
You know what? It's a fascinating topic.
Yeah.
But I have to run. I have child care duties.
Well, children come first.
Yes, I am sorry.
Well, maybe
on a pleasure catching up, and we should do it again.
Maybe on Sunday, if you have any time, maybe squeeze in a little time between the kid. Well, actually, you have only one child at the moment, as I understand it.
But,
watch out there. if you can, he'll be calling back. He'll be calling in on Sunday. Maybe you can listen into the show, you can listen into this if you go to the HUF website, huffsantacruz.org, and then you click on, you'll see a web address to go to, and you can then listen to the show, and you might want to call in. I don't know.
Okay. If it works out, I'll try to do just that.
Hey, Jay, thank you for the update. I probably should have gotten into the subject earlier instead of running through the Kerbugger Chris stuff, but I think people are interested in that too. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for having me on. It was nice talking to you.
No problem. Thanks, Jay.
Bye-bye.
That was Jay Lederman, attorney at law in Ventura, who was defending Kerbugger Chris, Commander X, also known as Chris Doyen, who was one of the main activists with Peace Camp 2010, reportedly in Canada somewhere, having fled the jurisdiction. But what I was saying to Jay before he left, and I'll just sort of conclude it because I've said it before on the show, is that police were using this law. It is true what Jay is saying, that a person who's going to file a complaint has to sign it, has to show up in court. But the mere threat of the complaint is what the police were using to drive away performers. And so those of us who were in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz singing at the time, it was a Wednesday afternoon, about 3 in the afternoon, when a police officer came along and told us that we had to move along, we said, because we'd been there too long, but because it was too loud, and we said, well, how loud can we be? We want to know so we don't violate the law. And the police officer refused to say, and said, if you don't move along, I'm going to write you a citation based upon this person's complaint. And we said, well, look, let us know how loud we had. We went back and forth with this, and she wouldn't tell us. And neither would the person who was concerned about this matter. Turned out to be a guy named Sean Riley, who was living right above the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and who slept during the day because he worked at night, and slept with his window open, although he said he'd closed it earlier in the day after hearing too much noise on the streets, and we had a long thing about that. The fact of the matter is, we were not necessarily unwilling to quiet down. We don't mind working things out with other residents, members of the community nearby, although we are pretty militant about asserting our right to be in certain places and to press on with our message, which had to do with the fact that homeless people in 2009, this was in January 2010 that this happened, were dying at a rather heavy rate. I think there were 40 47 deaths that year in the Santa Cruz County area, and we wanted to publicize that and bring it to the doorstep of Mayor Ryan Coonerty, his bookshop, and encourage people to raise the issue of decriminalizing homeless sleep somewhere, not everywhere and anywhere. It's the same thing I've been talking about for several decades on the air. And also other aspects of criminalizing homeless people in public spaces. And we sang a couple songs which had some homeless lyrics. And there was some very, very gentle amplification from a kind of a keyboard. But the person playing the keyboard wasn't charged with anything. And we weren't charged with doing amplified sound. We were charged, and we didn't really do any continuous singing. I was mostly doing petitioning and other things. Anyway, we were charged with this. This guy came down and signed a complaint, encouraged by the officer to do so, because I think the officer felt that her authority had been challenged because she was used to people leaving, and we didn't leave. And then we went to court, and the city attorney showed up supporting this guy. And that was the peculiar thing about this. We took it to the COLO session of city council. We tried to have it said, look, don't waste your money on this. But then they insisted on it. They held two separate trials, one for Becky Johnson, which only lasted an hour, one for myself and the late Robert Blind Bear Facer, which lasted many hours over many days, longest one, as I said, I've ever seen. And the issues that we tried to raise were that, one, we were doing this in connection with a lawful activity, which is free speech and petitioning and so forth, that it was in the middle of the day, that it wasn't really significantly louder than we had ever been at that particular location, that anybody who lived downtown had to deal with a certain amount of ambient noise during the day. That's just the nature of the downtown area. And we hadn't even been warned about it. I mean, this wasn't, you know, part of the law, but this was part of the reality of it, the common sense reality. And the judge, as I said, Commissioner Kim Baskett, who I've taken to calling Kim Baskett case, perhaps out of pique, she came off with a decision that was really peculiar. It's actually, it's been written out verbatim online. You can read it. It is amazing. And perhaps on Sunday I will go into it at greater length when I have on the line, if I do, Mike Millen, who in the case of, I think his name is, well, his name is Hampsmeyer. I'm not quite sure what his last name is. He's a preacher who 6 months after our case was, I think he was arrested for preaching downtown. I think it was near former Borders, now Forever 21, a store at Soquel and Pacific. And it took him two years to get to court and get a ruling from Ronald White, who, interestingly enough, is the same judge that we will be going in front of. I will be going in front of when I'm suing the mayors in about 3 weeks, Mayors Crone and Fitzmaurice, former mayors of the city of Santa Cruz, who had me arrested at city council for making a mock Nazi salute, and also the city, and in terms of former Mayor Kennedy, having me arrested falsely at city council for whispering to another person. After being warned that any violation of anything would result in serious consequences. So anyway, Ronald White, who has actually been very hostile to my case, the mock Nazi salute case, which had a little kind of write-up in the Sentinel yesterday, found this entire unreasonably disturbing noise law unconstitutional in a decision that I tried to explain on Sunday and I kind of fumbled around with, and I apologize for confusion that people may have had trying to listen to me explain it. But what he eventually came up with, as I can now understand it after reading it more closely, was the law, which I think is completely ridiculous in a number of ways, particularly this kind of strange... Let me see if I can draw it up again here online. Let's see if it's right here. Now, the law... Come on, baby. Sometimes takes a while to scroll through this stuff. The law, which says, you know... No person, you know... The issue in question is whether... The noises or sounds are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness or which are so harsh, prolonged, unnatural, or unusual in their time, use, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person. That itself is pretty vague, it seems to me, but Judge White didn't think that was vague. He thought that was fine. But what he didn't like was the second part of the law, which was not only do these noises have to be unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying and blah, 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 but they have to be not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. And in the case of Hampsmeyer, I think it was William Hampsmeyer, but I'm not sure what his first name is, Hampsmeyer, he was preaching. He was probably preaching some fundamentalist stuff, I'm guessing, because I vaguely remember something around that time, but not for sure, which wouldn't have been pleasant to a number of people who have some strong disagreements with Christian fundamentalism, myself included. But I have even stronger disagreements with police shutting people down. He would be lawfully conducting an activity because he's engaging in his First Amendment rights, as we were. The difference between his case and our case is our case just got as far as the three-judge panel that looked over Kim Baskett's ridiculous decision. And I'm calling it ridiculous without going into the specifics, and I should really do that at some point, and may well on Sunday. But the specific reason it was thrown out by Ronald White, this entire law, and there is no unreasonably disturbing noise law right now downtown, so they can, I guess they can accuse you of disturbing the peace if you start threatening people, but in theory, at the moment, you can, if the police officer comes up to you and says, you know, you're making too much noise, you say, officer, I don't think so, but you're entitled to your opinion, you can continue to do what you're doing, and if you get arrested, you have a very good case for a serious false arrest suit. Of course, you have to find an attorney, which is always a difficulty. But in this situation, it might not be so difficult. It might be a slam dunk. That means the city attorney is probably going to come back and try to change, offer a substitute law pretty quick. But the reason it was found unconstitutional was that second provision, which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. It sounds pretty reasonable. But for Judge White, it was too broad. Or not broad is the wrong word. He didn't find it too broad. He found it too vague. And there's a difference between those two distinctions, which at some point I'll get into. Probably not today. What it means, though, in a kind of simple language is an ordinary person cannot tell what is legitimate and what is not. I mean, it seems to me even without that phrase, and that's, I think, what the city council is likely to come back with, was a law simply omitting that phrase and simply talking about physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness or harsh or prolonged and so forth and so on. Those things, to me, don't tell you how loud you can be either. It becomes, you know, very subjective. So it's not really any less vague once you remove that section. But that section is the section that, because it's a key component of the law and you can't be found guilty without that section, resulted in Judge Ronald White's throwing out the law last week. Now, I believe we have a kind of a news report on that. And let me see if I can draw that up. It may take me a moment. It's good news, the fact that it was thrown out. Although, ultimately, it may not be good news if our friend Ray Glock-Grunike, who some may remember from older times and who some may remember from the show he's occasionally called in and spoken when he was here, he's moved to China, he's working there, but he did correspond by email and express some... He gave some extensive ideas on what the law was about, or about what the decision was about, and when I suggested he should cook up a law that's better so we can kind of beat the city council to the punch, he said he didn't want to do that. And I think I may read to you why he decided not to. But before I do that, here I'm hoping is was the KSBW news report on the issue, assuming my computer is willing to cooperate here. We'll be crossing our fingers as it plods through its motions. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio. In case you just tuned in, this is 101.3. And you can also find us by going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and finding the actual... stream, which is there on that website. It's not on the Free Radio website anymore because we have been threatened with lawsuits. Freak Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM, however, still is. You can find schedules there and information about how to join the collective and some archives. It's www.freakradio.org. And let me see if I have the video of this. Let's see what we got here. Might. It's coming up. William Hampshire was the guy's name, and I'm trying to get this to play. It keeps saying...
In Santa Cruz, a federal judge has struck down the city's noise ordinance. It stems from the case of a street preacher arrested in downtown in 2010 after police officers said he was preaching too loudly. Action News reporter Margo Dunphy spoke to the preacher's attorney today. She's live in Santa Cruz with more. Margo?
Well, Tom, you know, the ruling came down very late yesterday, after 5:30, in fact. Now, attorney for the plaintiff tells us that what the judge was saying with his decision was that the ordinance here in Santa Cruz was so vague that it violates the Constitution. What is the definition of unreasonable and unnecessary noise? That was a key point in a federal judge's decision Friday to strike down the noise ordinance in the city of Santa Cruz.
The judge found that we were correct in one of our arguments, which is the city of Santa Cruz has a noise ordinance which is so vague that the average person can never figure out if they're violating it or not.
It was the case of William Hamsmeyer, who was arrested in May 2010 for preaching loudly on the corner of Pacific and Cooper Street in downtown. Although charges were dropped, Hamsmeyer's attorney says his client's right to free speech was violated, all because of vague wording within the ordinance.
The part that the judge didn't like was the idea of it being unnecessary, because what I think is unnecessary may be different than you.
In Santa Cruz, musicians and street performers are part of the scene for visitors.
I think it would be different if it's an altercation, somebody screaming or a fight, but just if you're talking. But again, if you're right in front of a business, a store, maybe I could see that point.
For the locals, the colorful assortment of entertainment is something they expect.
Oh, I think they're just doing their thing, and if I don't like it, I'll just keep moving.
The ruling means that for now, police are forbidden to enforce the noise ordinance at all.
However, being a city, the city of Santa Cruz is always free to pass a new ordinance if they want to.
And we spoke to the Santa Cruz mayor today, and he told us he was unable to comment on the ruling or what the city intends to do about it because he needs to look over the opinions from the court with the city attorney. Tom, back to you.
All right, thank you so much, Margo. And you can find a portion of the Santa Cruz noise ordinance in question on our website at ksbw.com.
And that was the KSBW account, I guess it was Monday or Tuesday. It was in the paper, I believe, I think it was Monday. It might have been Tuesday. Maybe it was Tuesday. And it was an interesting story in a certain way. It did actually mention our case sort of toward the end, the case of the longest trial and so forth. The real problem with the ordinance is not even the parts of the ordinance that are likely to remain, that they're likely to repass, which is, I don't really know what they're going to do, so why would I say that? But a police officer couldn't tell us what she thought was of a fair level of volume, because she just said, it doesn't matter what you do, I'm going to simply be the tool of whoever wants to heckle you and get rid of you. I will simply have, cite all of you, and you'll all have to go to court, and you'll all have to face a $450 ticket and a trial. And you might have to face it with the city attorney. Why they're coming in on the side of a private citizen, it's a little hard to understand, except there is this new kind of coalition with...
In Santa Cruz, a federal judge has struck down the city's noise ordinance.
Repetition
it stems
here.
From the case of a street preacher arrested in...
Let's try to dial that one down. So you have a situation where you want to leave rather than face these kinds of citations, tickets, and threats, although some of us are really concerned with maintaining constitutional rights downtown, and we've, members of HUF, have been willing to stand up to that in the past, even get arrested for it, in the hope that if the courts don't stand up for us, then in some sense the community will, in some sense there might be, there'll be a higher court decision. And indeed, for William Hampsmeyer, this preacher, there was a higher court decision because it was taken directly to federal court. We spent our time, wasted our time with the local courts here, which are just horrible. I mean, there's no respect for the constitutional rights of ordinary folks who are particularly poor people or activists when it comes to this coalition between the police, the merchants, and the city government, which in essence wants to turn the downtown into a sort of a Carmel North, you know, with a few extra frills, perhaps, provided it's all well under control by the police department in the, you know, in the most noxious sense, in the sense of just if it suits their sensibilities, it's fine. If it doesn't, you know, you lose. And the situation right now, the police don't have that tool. And so at least for a brief period of time, people can be free to say what they need to say, sing what they need to sing, play what they need to play on the street. Of course, that doesn't mean the police won't crack down harder using other ordinances, which is what happened in Los Angeles when the sleeping ban was thrown out under the Jones settlement down there, when they started using other ordinances. I'm hoping that hasn't happened. I haven't heard any reports one way or the other on that. I'll kind of keep my ears open. In fact, I'm encouraging people to call in. If you've had some experiences with singing downtown or how police are treating people on the streets on Pacific Avenue in the last few days, let me know. The number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And we will discuss that, or at least you'll be able to give us an update, and I may be able to get some more information as time goes on. And again, tune in at 10 a.m. on Sunday on the show, and I'm hoping, again, we'll have more information on the subject, both in terms of how this came down from Mr. Hampsmeyer's appeal. I don't think he was even charged. They didn't even charge him, but he sued in federal court for false arrest. We asked them not to charge us, but like with the West Modes and the parading on Pacific Avenue, like with the 500 and, well, I don't know if the 520 or 30 homeless people who've gotten camping tickets for sleeping, though they have no other place to sleep in the last 2 or 3 months, what their situation is, but let's see what this caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is Lighthouse Linda.
Hey, the
Barbara Ghost.
You're the upcoming lodging criminal, are you not?
Upcoming criminal? No, you won't catch me doing it again.
Oh, well,
I've learned a lot about making boundaries since that I got that citation.
No, you have an upcoming upcoming trial, as I understand it, Linda, and that's just what, about two weeks away?
No, it's a week away. From right now.
Oh wow!
From 8 hours ago or something.
That's true. So you have jury selection on the what, on October 9th at 9 o'clock in Department 2. Is that right? That's my understanding. Anyway, that's what I understand.
October 9th, you say?
I'm sorry, October 15th. I'm thinking of somebody else has got something on October 9th, which I'll mention in a moment. But yeah, October 15th is when you have this.
So 15th, a Monday, I'm told. 9 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, 15.
And someone suggested that the first day will probably be predominantly jury selection. So I imagine, but you never know, and I've seen this judge. I'm not going to try to second guess him. You never know exactly when the trial will start, but that's the closest thing I have to.
Yeah, so we've talked about your case at length in the past, which has to do with the fact essentially you were just being there and late at night supporting other activists who were there at the 2 years ago, and for simply not leaving when they told
supporting
you to leave.
Supporting homeless people have to live outside because for once they get
you were given a misdemeanor citation, and now you have to face 6 months in jail, right?
Well, if that's the sentence the judge pulls out of his head, I don't know what to expect, but My lawyer suggested that the judges don't usually, like, go back on what they've started in that regard. It's embarrassing or something to, like, look at this like a whole new case when it's like they set a trend or precedent of a sentence that's absurd. It boils down to you get caught asleep, because they're defining this as sleep, ridiculous, for the lodging law. But you get caught asleep one time, and you can go to jail for 6 months. And or other combinations of, I'd call it more like exploitation than punishment.
Well, you know, we should really clarify, I think, at least from my perspective, they don't really, I don't think they do that. What they do, however, is if you're an activist like Gary Johnson, and you make it a political point that a person who is a member of this community, or even who isn't, has a right to sleep in front of a courthouse or sit in front of a courthouse with a sign, particularly if he or she is homeless, when the sign says sleep is not a crime, that is a constitutionally protected right. It's, and, you know, provided they're not actually, you know, despoiling the environment or engaging in disturbing the peace. And my point here is that they want homeless people to go hide in the bushes far away and sleep, and they're not going to go after homeless people usually under this law unless they're trying to make a political point.
Oh, yeah, they got the good
point.
Homeless and the bad homeless,
right.
You know?
Right, that's but and also it's being used to go after supporters of homeless people like yourself. That's my interpretation.
Yeah, well, it's going after anybody that doesn't toe the line, anybody that jaywalks. There's a thing that's kind of, it feels like a monolithic downhill curse of darkness or something to me, where the police feel like, because they're being forced to interpret these laws with indirect or even felonious direction or none, where the rubber meets the road. And, you know, now they're being demonized for these policies that started somewhere else in the city to stomp out any homelessness you can even find, going under the bridges and wherever you can.
Linda, hang on. Linda, having a little trouble hearing you. Can you speak a little more slowly and loudly? Thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I called you for a certain reason. I wanted to talk about something else.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thanks for the plug for the trial, and I hope people that can stomach that kind of lingo in the brain will come.
So again, October 15th, 9 a.m., jury selection begins, and then once the jury is selected, probably the trial will be either later that day or the next day. That's what in Department 2.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. What is it you want?
Gallagher's Court, Department 2, 7010.
Do you want anybody to come to your jury readiness hearing that is actually happening, I guess?
Trial readiness,
yes.
I don't know. I'm hoping somebody that can take better notes than me could be there and be a witness. Maybe
that's on
I haven't had time to think about it or organize it.
Right, that's on October 10th for those who are interested in that. So what, that's also at 9 a.m.?
Yeah.
And also in Department 2. And October 10th is what? Is that a Friday? When is October 10th?
I don't know. Maybe Wednesday. I can't do numbers in my head.
Let's see. Today
anymore.
Today is October 4th, and we are Thursday. So the 10th would be a Wednesday, it sounds like. Almost a week from today. So a week from today, you're going to be in court waiting to hear, I guess, you know, I guess it's really a simple matter. Are you prepared to go to trial? Do they talk about jury instructions? Do you know what they're actually discussing, or does that...
Precisely, Robert, but my impression that I seem to have from that conversation is the judge wants to see what the actual testimony is going to be made of, the nature of it. You know, do they have evidence to make the point you think they want heard?
Would you people to come and be supportive of that? I mean, you're probably more interested in having them at the trial, but do you want anybody to come that day to provide hot chocolate and, you know, back rubs and
hot
things?
Hot chocolate's always welcome, but I would like to think that there'll be a couple people there as friendly witnesses, or at least somebody that can do that and take notes.
Okay, well, then I encourage people to come, but I also want to, you know, again, encourage you to come back to what it is you initially called about, because I've diverted you from that.
Okay. You know, my friends have been calling saying, oh, I wish I could go to your trial, tell me what happened. I wish I had thought to tell them, send the judge a letter and tell him that. But, you know, people can support me if they know me or know about peace camps and have a clue about what's happening to our humanity. They can communicate with the judge directly. My church did. I worship with Quakers. It's not really called a church. But it's a wonderful letter they gave the judge on my behalf. And, you know, like the ACLU gave to Santa Cruz 11. That's a really, it's a gesture of solidarity that almost all of us are capable of.
So what is it you want people to do? I'm sorry, can you sum that up for me?
Why not send the judge a letter, either on my behalf, if you only know me, but if you think about it, or you have some background, or you've been out, had a sleep on the curb, something about the lodging law and the idea of punishing people for doing things that are absolutely critical to sustain life.
So you want people to send the judge Grim Gavel Gallagher a letter encouraging him to go easy on you, you sleep criminal?
Not go easy on me, but just question the, I don't know, the process, the law,
maybe
the fact
you can,
that he wants to define lodging as sleeping. I don't know. I can't really make this statement right now.
Well, maybe what you can do is post something on Santa Cruz Indie Media or on some other, you have your own website. I believe it's Hearth by Linda. Is that right?
Yeah, Blogspot.
And you've done a lot of writing, some writing about this issue as well as other issues. Maybe you can post that on your website. People can go there and, you know.
I'll try to do that. I'll put
okay.
up some other
that
links.
Sounds
How
good.
Do you do that?
In the studio with me, I have Freedom, who has arrived and is poring over her journal. Perhaps she's going to read us some of the more choice bits.
Well, can I tell you why I called and then hang up?
You'd better get to it or else you're not going to have a chance.
You. Okay, you were talking about the downtown and the new legal appeal about going back to what should be the standard of noise on the street, noise levels.
I don't really have a standard for noise levels. I was concerned.
No, the thing you played, the tape you played at KSPW about the noise downtown.
I did play that tape, yeah. What about it?
We're all talking about this as if the merchant class has a total 100% right to define what culture is downtown. And that doesn't have to be true. There used to be a nexus down there of different cultural and value threads coming together. I'm just one to throw that out, you know.
Yeah, well, no, it really...
Fuck them if they can't take a joke.
Yeah,
it's
well,
just,
you know,
it's not a fucking... Even if it were just a merchandising law, it's not going to work if they have to fucking marshal it with cops and security guards walking around everywhere you go.
Yeah, you know, I think, Linda, it's really a question of how much people want to resist this. That's always the issue. I mean, if people want to get together and do what William Hampsmeyer did, get an attorney, take it to federal court, 2.5 years later, they actually might get a response, even from a judge who's otherwise pretty bad on a number of issues,
yeah.
At least on issues that I've been before him on, Ronald White, the federal judge.
Yeah.
But that, and,
if they really change, they have to have one foot out in the street, like... I was inspired by the do-it-yourself parade, you know.
There
has to be another level of...
I think that, you know, the issue also is one of the reasons they're pursuing you. I think they've offered you, to drop it to a littering ticket or something ridiculous.
No, they said...
Wait a minute. Let me finish. I know I'm probably not getting it exactly accurate. But what I'm saying is I think the reason they're offering you a deal of any kind is they don't want you to do what William Hampsmeyer did. Because once the charge is thrown out, although even, you know, that puts you in a position to be much more effective in a false arrest lawsuit. And you can go directly to federal court with that. Whereas if you get convicted, you have to go through the state court appeal process, which is endless and tiring and expensive, is my understanding, unless you have some other understanding of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I don't want to have it on my back for court, and I hope if he offers probation, it's something that I can actually agree to.
Well, you're assuming
all of this court trial is because, they told me I should take something simple, just an infraction, but they couldn't make it make sense.
Well, you're assuming you're going to be found guilty. You do have a jury in front of you. Not that I'm terribly optimistic about juries these days, but you may be in a different position than an angry attorney like Ed Fry or a very unrepentant and steadfast homeless person like Gary Johnson, who faced juries in essence with saying, "We deny the legitimacy of this court." You may do the same thing, and who knows? All you need to do is find one person on the jury who insists on not guilty, and they have to keep retrying, which I don't think they're going to do. So you may come out of this all right.
Sure.
And also, you have an attorney who I understand he said he's willing to appeal on this issue, if there are appealable issues.
So.
Oh, that's
so.
Great.
He understands I'm not willing to just let the lodging law lie. So I'm really concerned that the judge is going to put me on a probation where I'm not allowed to write for the public to share. I mean, I don't make money. It's part of.
Well, remember, the judge can't put you on probation. You have to accept probation. So, for instance, Gary Johnson, in essence, told Judge Gallagher when he was convicted of four counts of what you're charged with way back in the spring, he wouldn't accept probation. So the judge slipped back into a lower gear and said, okay, well, suspended sentence. And there was no probation, although Gary still has to worry about the judge unsuspending the sentence whenever the judge feels like it. And I'm not really quite clear when he can do that, but that's an issue for another day, I guess. So anyway, I would encourage people to check out your website, Hearth by Linda. Also check out Santa Cruz Indie Media. You also have been writing some great stuff about the Santa Cruz 11. You've written a long article for Street Spirit newspaper.
TheStreetSpirit.org.
TheStreetSpirit.org.
A year ago, too, I wrote one about Peace Scouts for people that don't remember.
And you've written articles, numerous articles in the past, and some of them can be found on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, where we have a lot of the old Street Spirit articles, though not all of them from Santa Cruz, archived.
I like that your website's growing.
And in case Freedom here has anything to say between bites, Freedom, there's a mic for you.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Freedom. Good to hear your voice.
You too, yeah. Thanks for telling everyone about your case, and thanks for writing that article.
Oh, you're good. Welcome. That thing almost wrote itself, at least the second draft kind of almost wrote itself. I had to hammer at it a little too.
Nice.
When it first sort of channeled itself, the part about what's going on now with the homeless, the part
we're gonna interrupt you, Linda, because
it wasn't there. That came later. I've never written like that before.
We don't have the article in front of us. The audience doesn't know what you're talking about.
I see.
And so, therefore, it's not. Yeah. Let's. Anything else you want to say about what you called in for, or anything we've been discussing?
Well,
anything
I told else? You, I just think downtown shouldn't be the exclusive right for merchants to regulate.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks, Linda. I know. Are you going to be at the speak out at the Sub Rosa Cafe in about an hour? Which is
I don't know too. I haven't managed to figure out how to settle myself into.
Which is the anniversary of the Occupy Santa Cruz. That's, I guess, what was the main subject of that Sub Rosa.
I have wanted to read a poem there, but I don't know if I have the support to get there and back. I don't know.
Okay,
but
well,
I'm halfway there.
Okay, well, if you make it, that's great. Freedom, you got something you wanted to say, perhaps? You're leaning into the mic? No. Okay, well, thanks, Linda, and call again if you want, if anything else rouses you.
Okay.
All
right. Okay, if I get a rise right away, I'll call back.
Please do.
It'll be good to hear you guys.
Okay, good to hear
Bye,
you,
Linda.
Too.
Bye, Linda. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And folks can call in, 427-3772. In the studio with me, I thought she was going to be here an hour ago, but here she is now. The evil Freedom. Freedom, what do you got for us?
I just dropped in to tell people about the action tomorrow that we're
Actions?
Having.
Actions? Wait a minute. I thought this was going to be a la-la-la celebration of Ghosts of the Occupy, that sort of thing.
Well, at 5 p.m. at Loudoun Nelson, we're going to have food. And 6 p.m., we're going to have a general assembly. And at 8 o'clock, we're going to have a showing of Brent's film, What Are You Doing Here? Inside of Occupy Santa Cruz, kind of a documentary of the camp and back last year. And it'll be fun. It'll be interesting.
Is this the same film that we've seen on YouTube that, you know, in many parts? I find
it's edited a lot. It's much different. Yeah.
It is different. Okay, because I was wondering why I was being dragged into a filming that I've already seen before, which, not that it isn't an interesting film. It is. I mean, I disagree with some parts of it. I think other parts of it are great. Anyway, so this is going to be happening tomorrow night at the Loudoun Nelson Park after dark, illegally, apparently, because the park closes at sunset. You intend to be lining up for the police batons and that sort of thing?
I highly doubt that anything like that would happen.
I tend to doubt it, too. Although you never can tell. Things have been pretty weird around here in the last year, I got to tell you.
That is pretty true.
Santa Cruz 11, I never would have expected anything like that would have happened, but it did.
Oh, yeah. But so now we got that out on the air about tomorrow's action, and that it starts at 5 p.m. I love Nelson. But also, I have these general assembly notes from Sunday, and since you were talking about Linda's trial, I also have... well, I guess that's unrelated. I have Linda's trial, but...
You can talk about some other stuff. You were going to probably mention Isaac's,
yeah,
and also the Cameron Lorando's upcoming hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something for the Santa Cruz 11, isn't it? The
yes,
discovery?
Cameron Lorando is one of the Santa Cruz 11. He goes to court on the 9th, I believe
let me
it
see
is
in my notes. It says...
I think it's Tuesday the 9th. That's where I got the 9th
yes,
from.
Yes, Tuesday the 9th.
And that's...
Department 6.
8:15.
Correct.
And that's... He has his attorney, Alexis Briggs, really was one of the active attorneys in this case. The other attorneys, you know... fiddled while Rome burned, as far as I could see, pretty much. Where this attorney came in real early, suggesting there was a lot of horseshit going down, as there was. I mean, it's not just that these are ridiculous charges. We're talking about the 75 River Street vacant bank, peaceful three-day occupation, where they're going after people who were pretty much reporters and supporters, but there's no evidence any of them, that I'm aware of, that any of them actually conspired to do this, or the main organizers of this, or vandalized. And it was just an opportunistic attack on activists in Santa Cruz who were seen at the site. And that's really what is so malicious about this, particularly since these are felonies people are being charged with. And I see you have your Santa Cruz 11 button pinned on your chest, which is great. I don't have mine, but I've got other buttons, so there. Cameron Lorando is a guy I really don't know very well. I've talked to him a couple times in court because we have to show up for these ridiculous things. But Alexis Briggs will be trying to have his all his charges dismissed, unlike the attorney for Franklin Angel Alcantara, who apparently doesn't think he wants to come to court and do that. And I say this about Ruben. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Freedom and Robert.
Hello, Robert. Uncle Robert?
Yes.
This is David.
Hey, David, you're a little faint, but I can still hear you.
I just wanted to say, in case anybody had any doubt, to see this film is going to be a wonderful historical moment in the revolution. I urge everyone to go there and make sure to see that film. I saw the pieces of it on YouTube. Now that it's come together, I'm so excited. Now, Robert, Linda said something about the fashion, the culture being driven by the merchants downtown. I think that is the issue. I think Linda was right, and I'm glad she called you. Bye.
Well, thank you, David. Succinct and to the point. I would have to agree with both David and Linda. The merchant attempt to suppress and monopolize the culture downtown to turn into a commercial scene is not only deplorable, but it's unconstitutional. It suppresses life, as far as I'm concerned, unless you believe life is money, which you, Freedom, apparently, you don't use money much these days, right? That's what the rumor goes. Is that right?
That's correct.
So instead of money, what do you do? Bat your eyes and offer to do physical labor? Or what do you?
I usually do work trade, yes.
Right.
Or just different trade also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how's that work? Are you able to get lodging over your head by doing that?
Yes. Right now I'm caretaking in exchange for lodging.
And is that from people that you had previously known before, or is people that you actually met and came to a new understanding and had not previously known?
From someone I met at Occupy.
And how long were you with Occupy? Or you are still with Occupy. So how long have you been with Occupy?
I'm almost reaching my one-year anniversary with Occupy. I ended up joining the Occupy Santa Cruz chapter at the end of October. And I've been with them ever since.
And are still there. Wow. This moneyless trip that you've been doing, how long has that been going on for?
That started on June 1st, and it was very, very rocky at first. And, you know, I'm definitely not perfect, but...
You have been spending money
at
different times?
No, I haven't been spending money, but there were some times at the beginning of it, especially where other people had bought things on my behalf. Like when I was in Mexico, there was a restroom, and you had to use money to go to the restroom. One time I may have evaded the police in Mexico and used a restroom behind a wall that didn't really exist, but...
So you kind of a do-it-yourself restroom.
Right, but anyways...
poo-poo in a pile, so to speak.
Well, who knows what happened. I said I may have.
I see. You don't remember at this time. You cannot recall as President
Nixon.
Yeah,
it was very hot in Mexico, so
yes.
Not a lot of water, and that's another thing. So anyways, there were these times when I felt uncomfortable, you know, with the circumstance, but for the most part, I feel like I've been improving, and it's a continuous struggle. But it's really not that hard. The main thing is to live simply. Just, I'm getting local organic vegetables for free right now. I cannot tell you my sources for that.
Secret sources, folks.
I'm sorry. And, you know, from caretaking, that's the place to sleep right now. Also, I love to camp. That's
camping is
a beautiful,
illegal.
It's a beautiful experience. And
we'll see if you can live without money when they haul you in. Have you been subject to any of the sweeps that the police have been doing in Santa Cruz?
I was actually in Cuba and Mexico during the entire duration of those sweeps, and then since then I've been caretaking, so I've been sheltered.
You've been indoors. As far as the sweeps go, I noticed the police have no longer do their Monday reports. They did a report every week for 6 weeks of how many campsites they despoiled, how many tickets they arrested, how many sleepers or whoever they hauled in, and that no longer is the case. But they, it doesn't mean the sweeps have stopped. I don't really know what the story is. So if anybody does know or has any information, or if anybody's been living without money, please give me a call. I want to know, you know, maybe we can see this isn't just some, you know, lone crusade by a one individual. It's, the number here is 427-3772, 427-3772 if you want to call in. And also, of course, Isaac Collins, we were mentioning court dates. Mm-hmm. He is an African-American lyrical activist, singer, and a mainstay of Occupy Santa Cruz back in the days when it was actually occupying.
Did you give out his trial information already?
I haven't. Go ahead.
Okay, so on October 24th is his arraignment at 8 a.m. I don't think we have the information for what department it'll be in at this time. But I also have the consensus, like the words. Remember when we had a
right,
proposal
there
on
were
Sunday?
Two measures of support that we both were Linda and Isaac. It should be said that what actually Isaac is accused of is he's the only person among hundreds, if not several thousand, at the Great Meadow arrested for possession with intent to sell marijuana, the deadly toxic drug known to have killed hundreds more people than alcohol and prescription medication overdoses combined. Or at least that's what the government might want you to believe, based on its kind of weird laws. What is that resolution that the the Occupy did with respect to Isaac and Linda?
So for Isaac Collins, we consensed on a statement. Basically, here it is. We demand the dropping of all charges against Isaac Collins as an example of the repressive war on marijuana, considering the possible selective enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is the only person who was
as far as I
arrested.
Know. Yeah. On April 20th, when that was a huge, every year they have that celebration up there.
Giant. Yeah, I remember that day.
Were you up there?
I was up there,
actually. Were you illegally smoking marijuana? You want to confess here on the air, perhaps? They have to prove it. Your confession is not sufficient, I don't
plus,
think.
It's not illegal, necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Always.
Just for your medical purposes,
right.
It's not illegal. Although, if you're within 1,000 feet of a school, it might... can't tell for sure. I don't know what the story is. Go ahead.
Anyway, so... and then the one for Linda is... Occupy Santa Cruz demands all charges be dropped for Linda LeMaster, 647E lodging, as well as overturn 647E lodging law.
Right, which is, of course... been around for decades, and was recently made worse by the much beloved Bill Monig, our local Congress guy, or is he a state assembly guy? I guess he was a state assembly, state senator guy. Anyway, thank you for that, Freedom.
My pleasure. Thank you for letting me crash your show again. I really appreciate it.
Not crashing at all. You've actually brought a little variety and... we could always do a little more. We could use more of the same in the studio. So keep bringing it in and getting it on and passing it over and all that stuff.
Will do. Thanks. Well, I think I'm going to head out and...
to the Sub Rosa Cafe, perhaps?
Perhaps.
So for those who want to check out the Occupy, yearly celebration that's supposedly going on at 8 o'clock there?
Yeah, we're having an open mic Occupy theme there tonight. So that'll be... another interesting thing, but today is our actual anniversary. So happy anniversary, Robert.
Oh, well, thank you. I I guess I was there at Loudoun Nelson Park with my little tape recorder holding on to the...
I saw you in the video.
I was videoing.
Yes. With your tape recorder, plenty of times.
I was tape recording, and that was in the days when I actually had operational tape recorders. Boy, it brings me back to my days of my youth, I must say. So I'm going to put on a little music because I want to have a few private words with you. Let's see if we can negotiate something without money, you know, some kind of understanding here. And I'll be right back. You can call in if you'd like, 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio. This is Bathrobs, Beers, Broadsides. Another one from Sarah Marlowe, and that one was called What I Fear Most. A couple things caught my eye in the newspaper, and then they're also on Santa Cruz Indie Media. I originally saw it on San Francisco Chronicle, in the San Francisco Chronicle. And it has to do with the shooting of the Bluford guy, Alan Bluford, in Oakland, and people coming to city council in great numbers, and then the city manager changing the rules to stop people from coming to city council in such great numbers. Reminded me of the Santa Cruz City Council's machinations that are going to be coming up for, well, we're talking with the city attorney about some out-of-court settlement in my case, which is the Heilkron mock Nazi salute case coming up for trial in late October, where I was arrested for a silent two-second gesture at city council, which you can see online. Go to Norse mock Nazi, and you'll find out what kind of mockery is going on. But this case up in Oakland, after, I'm going to read a little bit about this. Bluford supporters get the goods with city council disruptions, real disruptions, not mock disruptions or apparent disruptions, or the city council makes its own disruptions, which is the case for me. I mean, I'm really, I'm small change. I'm kind of two-bit on this stuff. I don't really disrupt meetings. That's not been my approach over the years. I will take things, I will insist on what I call regard my constitutional rights. But I won't lead a mass of people in disruptions, and I haven't done that. Others have been involved in those things. I've talked about them supportively, but I've never really, well, never isn't quite true. In different cities with other groups of people who have peacefully raised issues that other city councils won't consider, I've been a part of those protests. But in Santa Cruz, my activities have been pretty strictly legal, except where we're talking about the sleeping ban, and there have been some occupations of other buildings that were not considered felonies, that were just attempts to stop the destruction of buildings that the city had decided it wanted to do away with, and we were able to save, notably the Heiner House back in 1993, which was an old police department building that they wanted to crunch, and we said no, we occupied it, and we created sufficient publicity that they decided instead to use it for, I think, some kind of single-family housing afterward. They threatened to take us to court. That was actually where I first met this attorney that I'm currently been friends with for 20 years, David Beauvais. And they dropped all the charges. And then we were only charged with misdemeanors. In this other situation, perhaps because they're afraid of lawsuits for false arrest, I think that's becoming maybe increasingly clear, they want to pretend that these are serious charges in the Santa Cruz 11, so they're pressing on with them. But I would just love to see a false arrest lawsuit in the cases of Alex Taurosi and the other three defendants, Bradley Allen, Grant Wilson, who have been dismissed. I guess Ed Rector is the fourth, because a false arrest lawsuit would be a very nice attack on the city in these cases, or the district attorney, I should say, and the city too, since the police have been involved in this absurdity. But meanwhile, up in Oakland, I'm going to read this story by David Id. I'm not sure if that's a pseudonym or not. After having vociferously demanded justice for the murder of Alan Bluford since he was killed on May 6th, including effectively shutting down the Oakland City Council meeting on September 18th, the Oakland Police Department has relented to one of the family's primary demands by releasing related police reports, albeit redacted. This does not happen in Oakland. Police do not release internal reports to the families of those killed by police just because they ask, ever. Only through civil suits do such documents see the light of day, authorities usually denying access to the reports under the rubric of protecting the integrity of ongoing investigations that drag on seemingly indefinitely, and in the case of Alameda District Attorney's Office, investigations that are virtually never completed in the case of officer-involved shootings. We had a similar situation here in Santa Cruz with the shooting of Happy John Dine in 1997. He was a guy who the police said had a gun in his hand. It was pointed at the police. Turned out to be a replica, but they said it was a gun. And that story was only supported by two police witnesses and the guy in the police squad car. Everybody else who saw it, including conservative residents, said that Happy John Dine had nothing in his hands and no weapon, and he was simply shot down by Officer Connor Carey. That situation, which was researched, and the police department quickly tried to stitch it up. Within an hour, the police department said it was justified. The next day, the DA dismissed everything and said there's no problem. But we at that time, we had a somewhat aggressive mayor, probably one of the best mayors we've ever had, though I certainly didn't agree with her everything, and she doesn't like me a bit. Her name is Celia Scott. She's an environmentalist, and one of the few outspoken opponents of the sleeping ban, not that she ever did anything to end the sleeping ban that I'm aware of, but she at least has made it clear that she opposes it, the law that criminalizes homeless people at night who have no legal place to go in Santa Cruz. She insisted that report be released to the public library. It should still be there, though it may have disappeared by now. I probably have a copy of it somewhere in my endlessly dusty files. But the point here is, for the Bluford family in Oakland, you don't get reports released, even by going to court. But you do get them released by large, noisy, disruptive demonstrations at city council. Stuff that perhaps former Mayor Mike Rotkin might call fascistic. That's what he tended to call the voice of the people when it got a little too loud for him to feel comfortable with over the kinds of behaviors he and his council were engaging in. But here's some more of the story. And again, you can find this on East Bay Indie Media or indiebay.org/East Bay. On September 18th, the family of Alan Bluford and supporters disrupted the Oakland City Council meeting, demanding answers and accountability for the murder of Alan Bluford by Officer Miguel Masso on May 6th. The meeting was shut down by council members before its scheduled conclusion when members just walked out of the chamber. So in a way, though it may have been a loud, angry crowd, the crowd didn't stop the meeting. The city council stopped its own meeting, similar to what they did in my case. But I haven't seen a video of this, so I can't see if that looked like this was a far much louder and disruptive protest that was in essence demanding that city council deal with this real issue before moving on to other issues. City leaders followed up the next day by announcing that new policies would be devised to regulate public attendance at city council meetings. Knowing that those demanding justice for Alan Bluford intended to return to City Hall on October 2nd to continue to press demands, the city brought out dozens of Oakland police, closed to the public the viewing galleries above council chambers, and restricted who was allowed to attend the meeting in the main hall, leaving many seats empty. This reminds me of what was done in Santa Cruz in 1993 in a Homes Not Jails protest. In that protest, people began chanting, "Homes Not Jails." Then Mayor Coonerty, the older Coonerty, not the younger one, the one who's now supervisor and was then mayor, he cleared the chambers. He didn't arrest anybody because I don't think he wanted to file a bunch of charges against 30 protesters, which apparently everyone would have been happy to do now with increased money for police departments, and although you would think that there's other things to be done with that kind of money. And instead, they started regulating readmission to the council chambers. I was not allowed in, even though I wasn't a part of the protest. And there was another individual, a famous individual at that time, a guy called Wonton Dave Jacobs, as a longtime homeless activist who became here, a very militant homeless activist, not so long time, because he arrived in Santa Cruz in 1990-91. But he was very high profile. He stayed outside in a gaily colored bathrobe, and he would continue to very prominently camp at the town clock with political protest signs, first opposing the first Iraqi war. And eventually he was taken to court with all kinds of charges, essentially for camping or sleeping, somewhat similar to what's being done now all over the city to a bunch of other people. And he wanted to go into the council chambers. He hadn't been in there, and he was stopped. When an officer tried to stop him from going in, because he was not allowing people into the chambers, he tried to put the officer under citizen's arrest, and he was himself forcefully tackled and dragged off, although they never charged him with anything. It shows you how far one is tempted to say these fascist pigs will go, pigs describing armed people who use force with some lack of discrimination, fascists describing their willingness to cut short any democratic process based upon some sort of police notions of who can be allowed to participate and who cannot. Anyway, so I've seen that process in Santa Cruz, but not so much recently. They're using more subtle methods now. Although knowing that those demanding justice for Alan Bluford intended to remain to return to City Hall on October 2nd to continue to press demands. The city brought out dozens of Oakland police, closed to the public the viewing galleries above council chambers, and restricted who was allowed to enter the meeting in the main hall, leaving many seats empty. Nevertheless, enough demonstrators, including Alan Bluford's family, made it into the main chamber before the Oakland Police Department locked down the room at the start of the meeting that normal council business was not allowed to proceed. Eventually, an exasperated council member, Larry Reed, handed over his personal copy of the police reports to the Bluford family, reports that Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan posted online for public consumption at about the same time. The Bluford family thanked supporters for demonstrating for justice for their son. Family and supporters then left City Hall for the right to review the non-redacted information in the reports. Witness statements in the police reports released reveal that Allen was on his back at the time he was shot by Masso, trying to get up, did not have a gun in his hand, and said, "I didn't do anything." A press conference will be held by the Bluford family on Friday at 4 p.m. in Oakland City Hall to demand Masso be fired and prosecuted for murdering their son. And there's a report from inside council chambers here. More information online in this story. Lots of posters and pictures and folks in the Oakland City Council chambers. Again, the reason I mentioned it when I heard about this was the how familiar it is that those in power in different city councils in different cities will try to restrict access or speaking time by members of the public that they don't want to hear from. Also, I should say, this report, which was released by apparently by a council member initially, and was mirrored in Santa Cruz back in 1997 in the Happy John Dine slaying. Celia Scott, as mayor, released the report. It wasn't the police department. She released it herself. She released her private copy, I believe. I think that's my recollection. I'm not entirely positive, but as I hear this, that's what I remember. The issue of police people killing members of the community and then covering up these shootings and acting as though nothing had happened or blackening the reputations of those they've shot is a serious problem and one that needs to be really taken up by groups in the community who have the resources, determination and courage, as well as the time, to address them. That can involve a lot of Public Records Act requests, organizing the kinds of protests that were organized in Oakland. And, you know, you may be accused with felony conspiracy to disrupt a public meeting. That could happen. But it could also happen that you will cause information to come out that may change police department policies, or at least alert the community to the reality of what's really going on. And that, of course, is what a lot of us have been trying to do over the years. And again, if you want to read more about it, just Bing or Google for Alan Bluford supporters stand up for justice. Bluford is spelled Blue, B-L-U-E, Ford, as in the car, Blue Ford supporters. And you can check that out. So I'm going to turn now to some street interviews, because there really have been street interviews. And again, I encourage you to come on back on Sunday. We'll be talking more about the sing-song situation in Santa Cruz, and hopefully I'll people will be doing a lot of singing on the streets, and we'll see if the police fuck up by trying to arrest people. I was going to talk about restorative justice in Seattle, which is an interesting there's an article about how there's a restorative circle using tactics from Brazil, which involve direct communications between the police department, victims and the crimes, members of the community, to try to take down the barriers and resolve some of the issues. To me, I'm rather suspicious of such things as sort of halfway measures that allow the police to say, "Oh, we're retraining, don't worry, nobody's guilty here, and somebody's dead, but oh well." An update on the Gary Johnson case. I talked to Ed Fry. He's the attorney for Gary Johnson, currently in jail in Watsonville. I believe he is coming out on the 20—well, the end of the month sometime. And Ed Fry will be off the ankle bracelet on October 23rd, which should be coming up soon. Also, there'll be a brief will be filed in the case of Gary Johnson with the help of Free, another ongoing activist who has a free radio show here. Good for you, Free. On November 8th, that's my understanding, in Gary's second case. This is the case where Gary Johnson received a two-year suspended sentence. I talked about it earlier on the air for sleeping on outside of the city hall, the county courthouse, on a bench with a sign that said sleep is not a crime, and being arrested four times for it, and then being charged with four separate crimes of lodging for sleeping on the bench with a sign. It's completely disregard for the Constitution here. And of course, all this is being done while there's a curfew around the courthouse created to, directly created to destroy protests there. And Occupy Santa Cruz, to their credit, ignores this on the Wednesday evenings when they hold their meetings there from 6 to 8. But it's just an example of this tightening grip that illegitimate police power has on the country and on the city. And, you see it most graphically at the national level, where the Führer, babbling with the wannabe Führer, Romney, about, issues that have nothing to do with really ordinary Americans, or that where they're essentially in agreement on... So many basic things on foreign policy in terms of foreign wars, where you have a situation where a person can be killed by simply secretly being designated an unprivileged enemy belligerent. That's the new terminology. It used to be unlawful enemy combatant under Bush. It's unprivileged enemy belligerent under Führer Obama. And... for all you fans who are exerting so much energy to have the Führer win over the pretending Führer, the Republican Führer, which is kind of ironic, as I keep telling people, put your energies into something else. I mean, vote for whoever you want to, but it's really kind of absurd and sickening to see people running around beating the drums for Obama. A war criminal. It's ridiculous. And ironically, if the Democrats lose, they're suddenly going to become very anti-war, believe me, because that'll be something they can beat the drums about until they get back into power, and when they'll use all the things that they criticized before, or most of them. So, there are some positive lights on the horizon. The judge has thrown out the mass Occupy Chicago, the Occupy Chicago arrests that happening, violating the park curfew there, just as there were mass arrests here for people, or not so much mass arrests, but repeated arrests for people who were, they were sleeping outside the courthouse. They were accused of lodging, which actually makes more sense, that kind of an arrest, unconstitutional as it may be, considering the nature of the protest. But there were other arrests and this curfew has continued to be enforced around the courthouse and around the city office buildings and the city library and the police station. But here's a story from Chicago. The mass arrests of Occupy Chicago demonstrators that the city leaders praised as a model for respecting protesters' rights were ruled unconstitutional Thursday by a Cook County judge who also declared that the city's overnight park curfew violates the First Amendment. Message to Susan Mariello, message to Don Lane, message to city manager Martine Bernal. Time to end the unconstitutional curfews in Santa Cruz, or hopefully get sued big time for them. The city singled out the Occupy demonstrators for violating the park's 11 p.m. curfew. We have a 10 p.m. curfew here, and a 7 p.m. curfew at the county building, and a dusk curfew at Loudoun Nelson Park, where this protest, this celebration of Occupy, is going to happen tomorrow night. It's going to be an illegal occupation after dusk. That is to say, a use of public property in a completely legitimate but illegal manner, according to our city thug bosses. Or the Gang of Seven, as I used to call them way back when. The city singled out the Occupy demonstrators for violating the city's 11 p.m. or the park's 11 p.m. curfew on two consecutive weekends in October 2011, arresting hundreds of people but made no arrests when 500,000 people stayed past the curfew at the 2008 election night rally for President Barack Obama that electrified the world, quote unquote. Associate Judge Thomas M. Donnelly wrote, "That selective prosecution of the curfew, combined with the Chicago Police Department's harassment of the protesters in the days leading up to the arrest, supports a finding that the city intended to discriminate against defendants based on their views. The immediate impact was to throw out the arrests of 92 Occupy protesters on charges relating to violating the curfew. But the judge went beyond that in staking out his opinion that the city is violating the public's right to free assembly under the state and U.S. constitutions by restricting late-night access to Chicago's most famous lakefront park, which he called the quintessential public forum." That's what Gary Johnson was trying to point out when he slept on the bench and got 2 years suspended sentence for it. And as all, he also got a six-month sentence, which he's now serving in jail, around the public courthouse, around the public, the main county building. That's the quintessential public forum. That's where you would go to speak to the city officials, or I should say the county officials. Noting the park's long history of political rallies going back to Abraham Lincoln, the judge quoted early city leaders who resolved in 1835 that the land would become the Grant Park should be reserved for all time to come for a public square accessible at all times to the people. Because parks are a critical forum for free speech and free assembly, local ordinances restricting access to them must be narrowly tailored to serve a specific governmental interest, such as park maintenance, Donnelly wrote. This could mean the elimination of the curfews in Santa Cruz if this ruling, which is being appealed, is upheld by the higher courts. Unfortunately, given the makeup of the higher courts, I'm not too optimistic. "We're incredibly pleased by Judge Donnelly's ruling. This is a significant First Amendment ruling for the Occupy protesters and all Chicagoans," said lawyer Thomas A. Durkin, who represented 12 University of Chicago students who were among the 92 arrested. City lawyers plan to appeal, already have appealed at this point, and do not think the judge's ruling affects the 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew in Grant Park or other city parks, said law department spokesman Roderick Drew. "The curfew is an important part of the city's efforts to maintain and protect public health and safety, and we cannot allow all city parks to remain open 24 hours a day, nor would other major cities," Drew said in an email. "We believe the ordinance is valid and will therefore continue to enforce it." The city may have a strong argument for appealing at least part of the ruling, said Timothy Zick, constitutional law. Anyway, where there's more about this story, go to it online by looking up essentially the story, Chicago judge rules out mass Occupy Chicago arrests as unconstitutional. And I really am going to play a few items now from the street. Let's do that. And if you got some stuff you want to bring up, you better do it. Give a call at 427-3772 before I disappear into the distance.
Which one is the guy here that just got his drum back and he's playing it? And all of a sudden, surfer dude was all pissed off and told him that he needed to stop banging his drum. And we're like, it's a free country, thanks for your opinion, but I'm, you know, free to play his drum here. And he just stood there, and then about 2 hours later, the cops came, saying that we had our dogs not tied up, when I was obviously holding my dog's leash. And I just stood there, I was like, turned my back to him. He's like, hello. It was kind of rude to me, but...
When was this?
Like 2 days ago.
Today is September 28th, so it's about the...
Wednesday.
Today is Friday. It was Wednesday. What time of day?
Afternoon.
And where was it?
At West Cliff at parking lot C by the lighthouse.
We're talking about, no one talking about Lido, right?
No.
This is somebody, he also lost his drums, is what he was telling me. But that was, I think, earlier. What's your first name?
Indica.
Any other thoughts you want to pass on?
Okay.
Haven't been hassled for sleeping, given tickets, driven on?
No, me. I've been okay, but my friends have.
And how long have you been here?
Since July.
And what have you heard from your friends you think I should pass on?
Well, it's just, we heard it was sweeps, and it was just the end of the summer. They're trying to clear out everyone that came here traveling and trying to scare us off. I did get a ticket downtown for apparently panhandling after dark,
After dark?
Yeah.
You were terrorizing the natives?
No, I was actually playing my music with a sign that says hugs are free. Wasn't asking for money at all.
Name of the cop who gave you the ticket?
I don't remember.
What did he look like?
He was Asian.
Yeah. And what have you done with that citation?
Nothing. How am I supposed to pay it? I live in my car. Whatever.
And you haven't been hassled for sleeping in your vehicle?
No, luckily. I heard everyone got ran out on Highway 1.
How long ago?
Back right after the holiday, Labor Day.
And have you continued to go downtown to play music or not?
Nope.
That stopped you?
That stopped me after that.
When did that happen?
That was after they gave us a ticket.
And when, what more?
We went and got all the codes and laws and figured out everything, and we have dogs, so you can panhandle legally in the daytime, but you're not allowed to do it with your dog, so where do I keep my dog in the heat of the day?
And actually, you should, there's a section of the code that says that playing for musical performance for donation is not panhandling.
Yeah, sure.
So you may be okay with that.
But they still...
They don't give a shit. They'll give you a ticket anyway. Of course, if you take it to court...
You're sitting on the planter, sitting 14 feet away from an inner... You have to be, like, 14 feet away from the intersection by any business. There's counts of the blocks that you have to be in certain areas. So.
Well, it's all for your own good.
Yes, whatever.
We've been talking with?
Huh?
Your name again?
Indica.
Is, thanks, Indica. Good luck. This will be an
hour. Yeah, we got really asked the last
Your name is?
I'm Wolf.
What happened, Wolf?
Well, me and my girlfriend, our car broke down in a parking lot, and we were going to push it out, but a park ranger told us we weren't going to be able to move it out of the parking lot, and he shut the gate on us. And then told us we weren't allowed to sleep in the car or else we were going to get trespassing tickets, so we had to sleep outside. She's got bronchitis, so it doesn't really help.
So what did you do?
Well, we had to sleep outside in a tent somewhere on a cliff.
Did you get ticketed or arrested for that?
No, but they told me that, you know, we would have.
They found you. And next time we'll be more careful and we'll get you.
Well, see, the thing is that I noticed that they circled around our car quite a few times. Like, we weren't that far away from it, so I could watch it and whatnot. They're watching the car heavily to make sure that...
Which park was this?
The Westcliff Lighthouse State Park.
You have your car now?
Yeah, actually, it's still parked there. This happened last night. Like, they know that we're out of gas and we're trying to get it. They just said that we weren't allowed to move it.
Hope your car is okay. We've been talking with...
I'm Wolf, and
Victoria.
Thank you, Victoria. Thank you, Wolf. Two tickets in less than an hour for...
One was for being in a closed area, and the other one was for possession of marijuana after I showed him my recommendation later.
Name of the cop?
Annoy.
And your name, if you want to give it?
Jake Gilbert.
Thank you, Jake. You can give a call, talk more later, since you're about to go in. I don't want to delay your meeting.
They're harassing the hell out of me. Just incessant harassment, day in, day out. It's a total pattern of behavior with these guys. You know, it's just off the hook.
How long have you been in town?
4 years.
And this seems to be more than the previous summers?
Yeah, way more, way more. Since about early July, and they bulldozed that camp out on the island, and it's just straight threw away a bunch of my property, a lot of really expensive oil on canvas artwork. I'm a musician, you know, I mean...
You should compile a list of your property and give me a call.
Okay, I will.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Any reports from the street?
Nothing.
All right. Any reports from the street to problems? Problemas? Thanks. Street reports, hassles of any kind, good things to say, poems perhaps?
Thank you.
He lived, he died, good night.
There you have it. A brief summary. We have a report, a brief report from Elm Street from
Lasker.
And what did you see?
I saw four policemen laughing as they drove away as the alleged perp opened up his skull to expose the blonde hash. Not the blonde bimbo, the blonde hash. And they let him go. They thought he stole it from a store.
What, hashish?
Well, it would have been Amsterdam or Oaksterdam or something.
Well, there's a dispensary in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but I don't think they kick it out in chewing tobacco containers. So I think it was kind of a ruse. Give them some
overtime. Any other reports from the street you've seen in the last few days?
No, they've been actually kind of just, you know, orbiting. But the weekend's coming up, so they'll get back on.
We've been talking with
Oscar.
Thank you, Oscar. Any reports from the street guys, hassles with police, exciting adventures?
We usually do all right with the kids, so they don't.
Who is this child? How old is this baby?
He's two.
And are you out guys outside?
No.
No.
We just came
not
to eat.
Now.
We're just poor. We're
yeah.
Just some food.
Poor? What are you doing here, poor people?
And we, people on your shirt.
Certainly not. We don't have no poor. And we've been talking with
Vanessa.
Lindsay.
And
Trent, Nathaniel.
All right. A whole family here.
What do you do here?
I do a radio show and also work with a homeless civil rights organization.
This is in the line in front of the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, which has a meal every weekday, and also, I guess, access to showers at some points. I think it's between... I'm there between 12 and 1, and I got a lot of interviews until I was almost run off by the manager of the the place. But we'll see how things go.
So you have a report to...
Yeah, the Rangers took all of our stuff.
Here.
When was this?
That's about a week and a half ago. Donna Marie, come here. Right now. Come on, attention, please. Donna Marie, come here, please. Donna.
She's devastated.
So tell me what happened.
Well, they came and they took all their stuff from their camp, everything down to anything that they had.
How long ago was this?
This was about 5 days ago.
And what kind of property? You weren't there, were you there?
No, but I the aftermath, I see it all the time. I've got a three-day notice 6 days ago, and they're still giving us a hard time. No matter where we go, we can't stay there for very long.
And your name is?
Oh, I'm Richard Martin. We've talked before on the...
Thanks, Richard. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. I got a ticket for trespassing, sleeping on the front porch of, or back porch of Art du Jour on Cedar Street, and I had to go to court on Thursday, October 4th, and I'm going to say that I was only just sleeping there, and I didn't have any place to sleep. There was no room in the shelter, and I didn't mean to be trespassing, and see if I can get off with a letter stating there was no room in the shelter. And also, I have a card here from Robert Norse, which I will show to Commissioner Baskett and see if he shows me some mercy.
At which point, they'll convict you when you show them that card. You really want to...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good.
She doesn't like me at all.
Oh,
you know,
well, it's good to be in good company.
He's very outspoken.
You might want to contact Steve Plate, who is a legal worker. If you got a pen, you can write down his number. I'm going to give you... Here's a pen. I hope it's a pen. His number is 466. His name is Steve, and it's 466-6078. And he's available usually quite frequently.
6078?
6078.
6078.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, the one thing about a trespass ticket is, the other thing you can do is go to the law library and read the law that's on the ticket, so you can really acquaint yourself with what you're actually charged with. Trespass usually requires that you be given a warning to leave and then refuse to leave.
Yeah.
But it depends. There are different kinds of trespass. So.
Well, the person that's pressing charges, who's found me on the porch.
Did they tell you to leave?
No, I was woken up by the police.
So, but you were not given a warning to leave?
No.
So,
they were fast to... They asked the owner if she wanted to press charges, and she said, yes, I do.
Oh,
was
how nice.
Was it posted? No standing, no lawyering. Was it posted right there?
No.
See, well,
talk to Blake. Talk to Steve Blake. Any reports of problems with police? Or?
I talked to you the other day about them coming and taking stuff.
Tell me again briefly before you go.
Well, without notice, they're taking people of things, all their belongings.
Your
personal
stuff?
Personal things, not...
Somebody, people you know?
Right. Personal items they've had for years.
Your
so
first
I think they're doing something about it.
Your first name is?
Diane.
Thanks, Diane. Any street reports? Nope. Reports from the street about problems with police, property taken?
Nothing.
Not lately.
We've been hiding.
That's good. Hiding well, I see.
Yeah, we're hiding very well.
We have to keep moving further and further of the mountain.
Yeah, for you.
But it helps you have good, it's good exercise, yeah? You look pretty tired, actually. Tired but happy.
How are you doing, man?
I'm all right.
Jail standing. You're feeling, right?
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten to trial yet.
Okay.
Yeah, don't lose your place.
No, I've already ate. I just talked to my wife.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
reports from the street.
I'll talk to you.
Hello, my name is Ben.
And Ben, any problems with the police or camping tickets or sitting tickets or singing tickets or tickets?
I haven't had it so far.
Well, get out there and have some problems. Otherwise, this is very boring. I can't, you know, I got to entertain people here. Any reports from the street?
Not right now.
Estoy en el ticket about 1 year ago.
For camping. And what did you do with it?
It's camping, but I property the outside.
Did you have to go to court?
No. I think
you're on the run, eh? I won't ask your name.
I'm Juan.
Thank you, Juan. Any street reports? Reports from the street for free radio? No. We're talking with
Josh.
And you say you like what the police are doing?
Yeah, I mean, they're clean.
Destroying tents, taking people's property, things like that.
Yeah, that's not cool, you know. That ain't cool, man. Yeah. They destroyed my tent last couple weeks ago, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I got raided.
And
everybody got raided, man.
That doesn't sound good.
Nah, not really, man. It's not cool.
And you're still outside?
No, I'm in the loft for now.
Okay, well, that's good. How long did it take you to get in the loft?
About a week.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
It's not long of a wait either, you know. You have a 30-month bed stay, but now it's a little harder to get in the loft because...
You mean a 30-day bed stay?
Yeah. It's a month. It's about 1 month.
Thanks. Any street reports, Bliss?
No, I haven't really been on the street all that much.
Well, get out there.
Reinforcements from Portland or something.
Yeah, call them up and let me know. Any street reports you want to talk about?
It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful day. Or it's a little foggy. Yeah.
Oh, now you decide to find
out. Anybody have any complaints or reports from the street? Police hassles?
Are you invading people's privacy again, sir?
I'm trying not to. Any street reports?
Do you have any recent issues of Playboy magazine?
Any problems with police? Or any hassles? Hey, man. Any tickets, hassles? Any tackles, any hassles? No, it's good. No? How you doing? All right. Any street reports or hassles?
Come here.
Hey, guys.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. Where's my hug?
Yes. This is the guy, Jeremiah, that's been telling him about you from down at the courthouse, remember?
I do not. Remind me.
Remember when I gave a speech and we were talking about when Oprah Winfrey came out and helped, her camera crews came out and helped the homeless, got the housing, and it was with Tent City and Safe Ground.
Was this...
And it was a drum circle that recorded me, too. And
this was the vigil we're talking about?
When we were protesting.
A couple
down
weeks
there,
ago?
No. A couple years ago.
A couple years ago, okay.
Down there in front of the court.
Uh-huh.
Down in front of the court about the homeless and things. And I've been looking for you. I need to find a way to get hold of you because we've got two houses now. And with the things that are going on down there at the River Street Shelter, getting ready to close down... And put people out that don't have money for rent and take people in that do have money for rent is making it to where those that don't have money have nowhere to go.
Now, where did you hear that the River Street Shelter, are you talking about that specific or Coral, are you talking about
the Coral Street Shelter.
The Coral Street Complex, because there's a River Street Shelter, there's the Page Smith Community House, Pauley Loft, and the Rebelli Family.
The Loft. The Pauley Loft.
Okay.
They're going to be putting those people out that don't have money for those that have money. So those that don't have money actually have nowhere to go.
You're talking about the people that are going to move from the Page Smith because they're remodeling the Page
Exactly.
Smith.
But they're not just remodeling it, moving them out.
Right.
They're moving them out and moving people in that can pay, and the people that are moving out is not like they're holding their spot for them to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very unfair.
Although I think they're not doing that yet because they don't have the money for the remodel is what I hear.
Right, but even if they, when they get the money for the remodel, it's still not fair to those that are a little less fortunate.
I hear you. The whole thing is completely unfair, but what else is new?
Well, what's new right now is that Betty Scott, she has a house, and she helps the homeless, and I'm there now. And we're working on another house, and we're using the churches and the pastors are going to come together and help with getting another place since shelters will be full. And we're not so sure about the armory, but before they open, we're trying to get a place for people to go in case when they shut down the Paul Street shelter. I'm not quite sure what you call it because I'm really not from here. But there might be a place. And this is just a single person who has just one job, taking care of a child on her own.
Keep us advised if you got more specifics, and you have my card.
Yes, I do, and I will be getting hold of you, and it's so good to see you
again. Give me a hug anytime.
You know what? All the time.
Where's my
we hug.
She's very huggable.
Yes.
We've been talking with...
Butterfly, again.
Thank you, Butterfly. We're talking with...
Judy Malone.
Judy, what's happening with River Street Shelter?
Well,
from one. I've been here almost 7 months. Can't get in. Mm-hmm. I'm half crippled. I'm disabled 100%. I can't work. Right. And they throw me out on the street. To the wolves. They don't care.
How long ago was this?
Almost 7 months ago.
And was this River Street Shelter? Was this Paulie Loft? Was this Paige Smith?
All of the above.
Now, what reason did they give you?
None.
And have you tried an appeal process? Have you asked to appeal?
I've tried everything, and they won't help me.
What was the last time you went to them to say, can I get in?
About 8 weeks ago.
And who did you talk to?
I talked to Chris that runs the Pauly. Mm-hmm. I've been to River Street. They won't let me in because I have what they call seizure palpitations. I don't have a convulsion. My brain shuts off and cuts back on 2 to 3 seconds later, and I'm faking them. That's why I take Depakote every day.
So
375 milligrams of it.
Where do you sleep at night?
On the street.
And how has that been going for you?
Hard. I hurt. It's hard for me to get up and move. Mm-hmm. And 9 to 10, I'm by myself.
You want to sit down?
No.
How are the police treating you?
The police? I was told yesterday to get the hell away from McDonald's, and I didn't do nothing. I was waiting on a friend. The cop was very rude, nasty. I don't know what his problem was. But he told me, I told you to leave already once. Now you need to get the hell out of here.
And who was this cop?
I have no idea.
So here's my card in the case.